be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women with your host, Deanne DeMarco. On today's program, you'll meet the next business and entrepreneurial rising star. You'll learn from their successes, challenges, and life lessons to find out what has made them recognized in their fields. Now, here is your host, Deanne DeMarco.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women. I'm your host, Deanne DeMarco. If you're ready to take the next steps to being empowered and motivated, then stay tuned. I want to take care of just a few little things first. First of all, thank you to all my listeners, and I appreciate all your emails that have been coming in literally from all over the world. It's nice to know that you're out there. Second of all, if you're going to be in the Chicagoland area, the Oakbrook, we're going to be having the today's Inspiring Women's Conference in Oakbrook, Illinois at the Oakbrook Bath and Tennis Club on Friday, October 4th. So if you're going to be in the area, please come look us up. We're going to be talking about entrepreneurial success secrets, marketing your personal brand, how to lead boldly with your inner strength, and how to develop relationships for better success. Well, today's show, we have got Martha Mertz. Martha saw women as from childhood. Martha saw women she admired, skilled, strong, inspiring women, but yet denied recognition for access to leadership positions. Carving out a career in the 1970s, Martha faced the same divide. Accomplishments that were acclaimed to men were often overlooked in women. The more Martha observed, the more she became convinced if women's strengths and contributions as leaders were publicly acknowledged, they could no longer be dismissed. In 1982 in Lansing, Michigan, Martha spearheaded a new leadership award program, the Athena Award, named for the strong, enlightened goddess. The award would go to individuals who excelled in their professions, gave back to their communities, and helped raise up the leaders, especially women. Now, Martha has been a spokesperson for the Athena since its inception, and she has carried the message that women are leaders literally around the globe. In addition to her role with Athena, Martha is also a successful real estate entrepreneur and is president of Maywood Mertz Investments. Martha has received numerous awards. I only have time to mention a couple here, but a couple I want to talk about was the Arizona Centennial's 48 Intriguing Women and Enterprising Women's Hall of Fame, and one of the top 25 business women owners in Michigan. Martha, welcome to today's Inspiring Women.
Thank you, Deanna. I'm just delighted to be with you today.
Oh, I am so thrilled to have you on the show, especially, you know, you sent me your book, Becoming Athena, The 8 Principles of Enlightened Leadership, and I want to get into that because that was such a powerful book. I haven't read one that powerful in a long time, and I want to get into that a little bit, but I want to talk about, you know, you started out as a real estate entrepreneur. What were some of the strategies that led to your success?
Well, Deanne, I started out with the idea that really I just needed to, as a mother of three children who were just coming into school years, I needed some adult conversation in my life. And so I started to work in real estate. My young family, my husband and I, had purchased a home. I'd been very ambitious, eager to learn about how to make this decision of buying a home work for us, because we didn't have very much at the time. And so after we were all settled in this home, I decided that perhaps helping other young families also find their own first home and make a very smart, informed decision might be something that I would like to do. So I went to work, and it wasn't very entrepreneurial at the time. I worked for a small company, but I found out that I was very good at what I was doing, and my clientele were all first-time buyers, which nobody else cared about at all, because there were certain things about first-time buyers. One, they had no money. Two, so they couldn't buy much. Two, they had no information, so they had a great learning curve in order to make a smart choice. Therefore, I was the only one willing to specialize in that area of real estate sales, and the money was small. But really, it was never so much about the money. It was about making a difference and helping people make an informed decision. And I loved what I was doing. So gradually, I came to be very passionate about my focus. I worked very hard. I loved what I was doing. I loved the people I worked with. And since work takes up such a large part of our lives, I think those things were foundational in my continuing to learn and grow as an entrepreneur.
Very interesting. So tell us about some of the some of those challenges that you had to deal with as a real estate agent.
Well, of course, when I started, women weren't really even in the real estate business. I was a little bit ahead of the curve, and nobody really was looking for women to be voices of business. But we were seen as people who knew about homes. So it was kind of a natural for women to be involved in residential real estate, and I was good at that, and I learned how to do that. But as I looked around and time went on, I started seeing that the commercial real estate had its advantages. First of all, it was only men that were doing commercial real estate, but they worked reasonable hours. It was 9 to 5. It wasn't after hours and weekends and holidays, when residential realtors generally do most of their work. And also, the decisions that were being made were based upon the economics and location and some intellectual approaches and so on to making an informed decision. So I started looking at doing commercial real estate. And one of the challenges you asked about, It was a time, we must remember, when women's place or role in society was being hotly debated. Women's roles hadn't been set yet, and this is not that many years ago. It's 3 decades, but there was a hot debate across the country, and so while I'm looking at getting into commercial real estate, I get my first customer calls, and this man has just purchased the rights to a franchise, and he wants a good location in an area that I knew well. And I went to work, and I discovered a piece of land that was going to become a corner on an off-ramp in a very important part of the city, and I was so excited to call him and tell him, let me show you what I have found. It's perfect for what you're talking about. So we made an appointment. I went to the site. The man never showed up. It was 45 minutes I waited. He didn't come. I went back, called the man. Sorry, we missed our first appointment. Let me do it again. Let's set this. You're going to like this piece of property. He didn't come the second time either. Uh-huh. And then I called him back and asked him why. Why was he doing this? And what he said astounded me. He said, "Lady, I would never buy a piece of commercial property from a woman."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was shocking to me, because he wasn't doing anything to uphold women. He was looking after his own interests, and so was I. But he didn't see that. So I had a partner and a small investment opportunity that he and I had been working on. I brought my partner into that, and we bought this piece of land, not just the piece this man wanted, but 55 acres. And it was put together with bubblegum and, you know, shoelaces, this deal. But then I called the man back this buyer of that wasn't showing up. And I said, Mr. Franchise Owner, I now want you to know that you will buy this property from a woman because I own the property. And he did.
And he tell us who that was.
Yeah, he showed up finally. And he bought the property, and he paid for that little bit of acreage, which was very well located, as much as half of what my partner and I had paid for the entire 55 acres. So I am grateful to him. And in many cases in our lives, you look back on the person who challenged you, who set you aside, who demeaned you, who caused you the hardship. But that person also brought to you a challenge that was possible to overcome. And in doing so, we learn numerous things, but mostly we learn about ourselves. I learned a lot from that man. Yes. I learned I didn't like his view about women. But I also learned what I was capable of doing, and it started me on a very good launch in terms of investment real estate.
And that franchise is still in business today.
The franchise is the most successful one in a three state area, and that's after many years. So he, you know, it's again another kind of premise. Everyone was in a winning position. It was win-win, as they say. He won because he finally got what he was looking for. I won because I was given a lesson in believe in yourself.
Yeah. You know, I'm hearing a real important thing here is one is when you're confronted by a challenge, and this sounded like a really major challenge. I mean, the man was clearly not going to buy from a woman. And, I mean, you could have just tucked your tail between your legs and said, oh, dearie me. But you didn't. It set you on fire is what it did. And you said, heck no, I'm not going to deal with this, and I'm just going to rise above it and make it happen. And I think that's really an important lesson for all of us, is that not to just give up, but just be firm and set yourself on fire and accept the challenge.
You know, I so totally agree with you. One of the things that I've learned and one of the strengths that women bring to leadership is that we are not so afraid of learning something new or saying, I don't know, but we will say that, and then we'll go to find out. We'll go to learn more, and we're not afraid of learning. And I think that when you are presented with what I would call, this guy was, a reverse role model, in other words, he was showing me exactly what I would never like to be.
Right.
His behavior was exactly opposite of anything that I ever wanted to have. But from him, I learned a huge amount. And very often, people who present us with reverse role model presentations very frequently are teachers for us if we take it in the right way.
I totally agree with that. Well, we need to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk more about the Athena Award and maybe one or two other events that led to the Athena Award, and then have you really talk about that a little bit more. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll stay tuned. You're listening to Today's Inspiring Women. We'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
Do you ever feel stuck on a hamster wheel? Constantly running but getting nowhere? Ready to try something different? The secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. Each week, you can find out how to choose your energy and change your life with your host, Deborah Jane Wells. It's time to get unstuck. Reclaim your personal power and recapture your zest for living. Tune in to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
We're tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's DEANNE at deannedemarco.com. Now, back to today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanna Mark with today's Inspiring Women, and we are listening to, as a guest, Martha Mertz, who is the founder of the Athena Award, which is an award that recognizes women, outstanding women and inspiring women. Martha, just before the break, we started talking a little bit about some of those challenges that you overcame in your early career as an entrepreneur. And I'd like to really touch on the Athena Award, because I think this Athena Award is so important. Will you tell our listeners a little bit more about this award?
Oh, I would love to, Deanne. The Athena Award was something that rose out of another one of those challenges that happened to me along the way. I had been asked to become a member of the Regional Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors in the middle of Michigan, and there I was the only woman on the board, which wasn't unusual at the time. There were only women in various positions. Women really hadn't achieved high levels of visibility at the time. It took me a year to learn how to speak male, which was different. Uh-huh. And then I decided that the one thing I could bring to that organization was a few other smart women, because you can't really affect any kind of change by being the only person there representing your perspective. I'm sure you know that,
sure.
And listeners know that. So I took the names of very prominent women to the nominating committee, and essentially my male colleagues told me women aren't leaders. This woman wouldn't fit because, and that woman wouldn't be right because, and so on. But they were saying women aren't leaders. So the Athena Award was brought together because we knew that women were doing leadership things, important things in that community, and they just were not seen as leadership skills. Athena Award became a way that through the Chamber of Commerce, one outstanding example of a woman as a leader once a year would be recognized and honored, and she would be honored because she had achieved excellence in her business or profession, but that wouldn't be the only thing. She would also be honored because she had given of her time and talent back to better the community in some way, and thirdly, that she would be someone willing to open leadership opportunities for others, especially for women, because we were so out of balance. And so that's how the Athena Award was started. That was the purpose, but it was really meant to recognize this new kind of leader and to bring into visibility in the community the new face of leadership.
And what I think is interesting is the Athena Award is a global award. I mean, you have presented Athena Awards all over the world.
It has gone beyond this country, that is true, and it's partially because it resonates everywhere. Women lead in different ways. We don't, the first wave of women into the workforce essentially tried to fit themselves into the existing model of leadership, which is a traditional kind of leadership. It's a hierarchy. And women for centuries have not had any authority, but they've learned how to collaborate together in ways that make them very effective. And the women that we were recognizing as leaders were doing things in different ways. That's why the Athena Award and the Athena philosophy has resonated throughout the world, because women everywhere essentially are the same. We bring the same kinds of strengths, whether it's in Africa or Iceland or anywhere across the United States.
Yeah, that's why I was really intrigued when I read your book. Tell us a little bit about, you have eight principles in your book about the Athena Award. Tell us a little bit about those eight principles.
Well, we surveyed women looking for ways that women lead that are different, because we were hearing women who were being given a great accolade, this Athena Award, say, "I don't see myself as a leader." And we really started to hear that as, I'm not doing leadership in the same way as it's defined throughout this community. So we studied these women who were Athena recipients, and we found eight different strengths that they brought to leadership that kind of defined a different paradigm of leadership. It's at the time we thought of it as something that was centuries old, but now we see that it contains the gold standard for leadership in this 21st century. And let me just take the first one, the first principle, which is perhaps the most important of all for any leader, female or male, is the sense of authenticity, that a person who is a leader must have a moral compass, must have consistent values over the period of leadership, must have an ethical framework. In other words, they must know their own values and be true to those values. A lot of times authenticity also has to do with, it's a less ego-driven kind of leadership. It's often the quieter voice that women bring. That is, it's not about necessarily competition, it's about collaboration. It's about building relationships with people. It's about listening to diverse perspectives, not just having all one perspective. And it goes on from there. It's very fascinating because none of these ideas are new. They're going to resonate with everyone who hears them. But but now what is new is we're calling this leadership, and it hadn't been identified as leadership before.
Yeah, I think that's real important. Why don't you tell our listeners what the others are? Do you?
Yes. The practice of learning constantly. I covered that a little bit, which also incorporates the art of listening, which is a part of learning. Women, we're great listeners. Advocating fiercely for something that you believe in. Championing what you believe is right. That's a very important part of leadership. Acting courageously. There's a time when a person has to be willing to stand up and tell their truth, and leaders must do that. I mentioned fostering collaboration. That is the art of being inclusive, pulling in even the voices that you would never listen to or even consult with, but the perspectives of the whole. It's like a tapestry instead of a single thread. Celebrating, sharing the positive and the powerful, or the tragic and the sad of having gone through an experience together. I mean, sometimes we as a team we move something and it's fabulous, but we come together and we celebrate that, and we also come together to mark a momentous moment, even when it isn't a celebration, even when it's a sad time. And so that's something that we do, but it creates a team idea, and it understands that leadership isn't just about the one person, it's about the team. It's about everyone has to pull together and has an important part in making something happen.
Yeah, I just was really impressed with how you pulled all this information together in talking about leadership and the strategies that women need to use in being a good leader. Why do you see these qualities as being important?
Well, I think that we can look at what the face of the world today and understand that that leadership has to really change. That we have to. Our world is experiencing crises in leadership, just at a point when it most needs to be led wisely, and we see that all around us. There are so many challenges: war, genocide, terrorism. Threats to the economy. I mean, we are presented with momentous problems, and what we need to do is set aside the sense of self-importance, come to the idea with a focus on accomplishing something. And I think that's what women have had to do throughout the centuries. Mm-hmm. We couldn't afford to simply stand up and proclaim our own wisdom. We needed to pull together amongst each other to find the strengths with all of us, and to share those in a way that would focus on making something happen, to change it in a positive way. So the people who have maybe led us into the kinds of circumstances that the world is experiencing, the difficult challenges, cannot be counted on by themselves to lead us out of those challenges. We need to achieve a balance in the voices of leadership, and that's what these eight principles of leadership really encourage. And it's not just for women. This is a standard of leadership that everyone needs to embrace. That's what we're trying to teach.
I totally agree. I got two questions I want to ask you. The first one is, you know, your book is called Becoming Athena, Eight Principles of Enlightened Leadership. One is, how do people get hold of this book? And then second of all, you know, there's a lot of women and organizations and women groups that are seeking to enhance their leadership.
Uh-huh.
You know, and these principles focus on the strengths that women already have and how to leverage those strengths. And so how do you share those ideas with others?
My book is available at Amazon. It can be found through the website athenainternational.com. If someone sends me an email, martha@marthamertz.com, I will sign a book and send it to them. And with regard to women and organizations and learning about these principles, Athena International has developed curriculum for college students. We teach women who are high achievers, aspiring leaders, and if there's an organization that needs a spokesperson, Athena International can provide that. And I on occasion go, as you said, all over the world to do to teach this model because I think it's so important.
Yeah, and I was just really impressed. I was thank you for sending me your book because I think this is a book that I think every woman should read. And it's called Becoming Athena, Eight Principles of Enlightened Leadership by Martha Mertz, M-E-R-T-Z. And I was just really mesmerized by reading it and the stories. And I just really love the book.
It reflects your own experience in a way, don't you think?
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea.
That's great.
You have no idea. It just really touched the soul, this book did. Well, anyway, Martha, I can't believe the time has just flown by. I'd like to thank you very much for being on today's Inspiring Women. Could you just repeat again your contact information for people?
Yes, I can be reached at martha@marthamertz.com. That's an email address. Athena International, if you Google that, it's the organization. We are headquartered in Chicago, but reached around the globe. And my book can be gotten through Athena International, Amazon, or just directly from me.
That's wonderful. And that's Martha, M-A-R-T-H-A, Mertz, M-A-R-T-Z. So it's martha@marthamertz.com. Well, Martha, thank you again very much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Deanne. Obviously, you're quite a leader, and thank you for inspiring so many women and men across your radio perspective.
Well, thank you. Well, stay tuned. After the break, we're going to be talking about a group of inspiring women on those our nurses and how they have inspired our unsung heroes, you might want to say. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with today's Inspiring Women.
We're on Facebook along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
When you make decisions, do you ever find yourself in doubt? Are you trying to figure out what's right with you? Are you ready to truly change your life? Listen for the Access Consciousness Radio Show with the founders of Access Consciousness, Gary Douglas and Dr. Dane Heer. Consciousness is all about including everything and judging nothing. Our program will help you break free from your personal limitations and enhance positive change in all areas of your life. Tune in to Access Consciousness Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
Wealth Solutions for the 99% is a weekly talk show focused on helping you develop and execute a game plan to build wealth. Your host, Paul LaJoy, who built a $50 million plus company in less than 5 years, believes it's impossible to be poor in America, and he'll show you why with his innovative strategies. Joining Paul as co-host is radio personality Kim Reed, an experienced entrepreneur and corporate leader who's known as the Corporatepreneur. The show is upbeat, fun, and informative. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick. Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel, voiceamericaempowerment.com.
We're tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco with today's Inspiring Women. And our next guest is a woman who is going to give voice to the millions of inspiring women that we often take for granted. You know, even the best health care reform plan will fail without an adequate number of nurses at the bedsides, in education, and in the community health. Irene Stemmler is a registered nurse and holds a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing from Rush University in Chicago. She has over 25 years of healthcare experience in nursing management, education, advocacy, and consulting. She has been collecting well-worn nursing shoes and the stories behind them in response to this country's impending nursing shortage. You may not know, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that we're going to have a shortage of nurses to reach as much as 580,000 by the year 2018, not too far away. Irene is an author of Heroic Acts in Humble Shoes, American Nurses Tell Their Stories. This book gives voice to the millions of nurses who are providing compassionate care in the face of unprecedented challenges in our healthcare system. Irene has been working on nurse recruitment strategies for the federal government. It is now back in a clinical role as a polytrauma clinical nurse educator for the VA, where she works with combat veterans returning home from traumatic brain injury and PTSD. Irene, welcome to today's Inspiring Women.
Oh, thank you, Deanne. It's really a pleasure being here.
You know, and just to, at the top, so I don't forget, for everyone in America, we would like to thank you and people like you, especially in working with our combat veterans returning from war. I just want to say thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. It really is rewarding work, so thanks.
So how did you get started into nursing?
Well, you know, it's so funny. I've always loved teaching, but I wasn't very clear about nursing specifically. I actually started my career as a respiratory technician. A few respiratory therapists took me under their wing, but there was one therapist who was extremely sharp. She was compassionate and patient, and she was studying to be a nurse. And I would say that she was my first mentor in my career. So following her, you know, I saw how she approached her patients, their families, much more than just focusing on their respiratory status. And so I found that I was really interested in that kind of an approach as well. And it just led to nursing for me. I think that we have a lot of mentors in our lives, or at least more than one. I don't think that there's just one designated mentor. And I think Barb in respiratory really showed me the possibilities in nursing, and she was able to help me set my foundation with school and so forth. So,
yeah. Question I have, it sounds like you've had more than one mentor.
I have. And I think that, and again, you know, I think that they come at different points in your career, and you certainly need to be open to that experience and be willing to accept that help, that assistance, that kind of a relationship.
So this leads to a second question. So did you go looking for mentors, or how did you develop that mentor strategy?
You know, that for me, it's interesting. I think that I was always open to it, but, you know, I never,
I never sought out a mentor. I don't know, as women, you know, growing up when we did, that we, that was something that we had talked about. But for me, it just seemed to happen organically, you know. So I, Barb in Respiratory was one such person. And again, so she was wonderful for me entering into the profession. There were others throughout my professional career, but there was one person who you know, I considered a mentor a couple of years ago, several years ago, halfway through, maybe about 5-7 years ago, and she knew I was switching my field, so I was leaving my area of expertise and getting involved in something else, and within healthcare. And she recognized my struggle, and she mentioned a nurse theorist, Patricia Benner, and who has a theory of nursing novice through novice to expert. And this person said to me, you know, you know, I know that you have a lot of experience in nursing, but in this particular area, you know, I believe you're a novice, and so let's really work on this.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. So it sounds like finding a mentor is a good strategy.
Well, absolutely. I don't know that you can do it on your own, and I don't think that you should. I think that there's so much to be gained from that experience, that relationship with another person, and I think, you know, in a good relationship, you really learn from each other.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, you work as a polytrauma clinical nurse,
mm-hmm.
You know, with our combat veterans after they've returned from war with brain injury and PTSD.
Yeah.
Now, how did you pick that specialty?
Well, so there's the beauty of nursing. There are so many areas within nursing that you can you know, stretch your wings and really, really develop an expertise. For me, when I left respiratory, became a nurse, I started in neonatal ICU initially, working with preemies and high risk newborns, and then I got into pediatrics, peds rehab, and really loved that model of care, the interdisciplinary team, working with a group of professionals. And from peds rehab, got involved in head injury and adult head injury rehab and education and so forth. And so that was always in my background, my experience. And I just happened to be at the right place at the right time a few years ago here at the VA, and a position opened, and I had that background and I had that passion for it, and the teaching part of it again. So it really just, you know, all of my loves, you know, just came together, and it really, Deanne, it's really been a rewarding experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's very interesting. When my dad came back from war, he would have been on your ward. You know, he had brain injury. I mean, he got blown up.
You know, and that's what we're seeing here. I'm actually working in an outpatient clinic. And some of our veterans, you know, it's taken them years to seek help. And others, I think that we're getting a better reputation in the VA, and we're seeing veterans now within the last couple of years a little bit more quickly after they've come home. And I think, you know, we just try to let them know all the services that are available, that people here really do care, and I think that message is getting across.
Well, I think also the community is just really being aware as well of PTSD and some of the brain injuries that occur after a war. I don't think we really paid attention to that before.
No, you know, we really haven't. And so interesting, there are even storylines of combat veterans coming home with PTSD on CSI and some of those other programs on TV. So it really is getting more
more press.
Notice. Yeah, exactly. Which is a good thing.
You know, we're becoming more informed.
Yeah.
You know, one of the questions that I have is I understand that the transition from nursing school to practice can be very, very difficult for new graduates and nursing graduates.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those challenges, and what advice would you offer them?
Oh my gosh, it really is a huge challenge, and we're finding that within the first month, and actually within the first 9 months, within the first year, but definitely within the first 9 months, new grads really have a difficult time acclimating to the real world setting in a hospital. Some of the things are the fact that maybe they didn't have that strenuous of a patient load. In school, they had a clinical instructor who was really more of a buffer for them. In the real world, they have perhaps a preceptor, but they're really, you know, they take full responsibility for everything. And it's, you know, the patients in the hospital setting are much sicker than they ever were before. And so taking care of many patients, maybe up to 6 patients on a unit, is a lot, and for someone who's a new grad. So those are some of the things. So we really encourage, most hospitals now are offering nurse residency programs, internships, and it's a way for the nurses to get a little bit more one-on-one supervision, care, mentoring, definitely, and also a place for them to be able to come together as a group and really use it as a group experience and talk about their challenges and maybe learn from each other and treat it more as a learning experience as a challenge. But that's what we need to do with our new nurses, because it really is, it's difficult transitioning.
Do you have a lot of nurses that go on to graduate school first before they've actually worked on a ward?
You know, we see that a lot, and I don't know what the statistics are exactly, but again, that would be another reason why we would need to, you know, to have that transition program. And certainly their heart is in the right place, but again, if you go back to that Benner model where, you know, novice to expert, you're looking at someone who may have theory, and well-grounded in theory, but the experience, the practice isn't there. So we really need to help them through the process.
Oh, yeah, very, very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I hear that a lot, that, you know, that as I speak to younger women around the United States, that they're just going on for that graduate work. And they're not getting that experience that they need. They've got all this theoretical background, but the practical isn't there.
And you just need to marry the two. I believe it's certainly critical to have that degree and that the theory and that knowledge base. But it needs to be married with the actual experience. You know, when I worked in neonatal ICU way back when, we had nurses at the bedside who had their doctorates, and it was refreshing. It was filled with pride, really, to be working next to these people because they were so highly regarded, and they functioned so independently at the bedside. So I think that it's important to have both.
You know, we have to take a quick break here. We come back, I want to talk about some of the stories in your wonderful book. We return and hear about some of these heroic stories. So this is Deanne DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to you in just a minute.
Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
The challenges facing our teens today mean that more than ever, we need to be there to support them and encourage them. The Dr. STEM Show is here to provide discussions about topics that will help promote healthy relationships, self-image, and success for teens, parents, and the community. Our young people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. The Dr. STEM Show, hosted by Dr. Stem Molatini, will foster these discussions and encourage your participation. Listen every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, and 9 p.m. GMT on Voice America Empowerment.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at DeanneDeMarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, and we are speaking to Irene Stemmler, who wrote the wonderful book, Heroic Acts in Humble Shoes, giving a million nurses their voice, these nurses that we often take for granted. You know, Irene, I really wanted to talk a little bit about your book. You wrote this wonderful book about nurses' shoes. You know, what motivated you to write this book, and why shoes?
And that's the million-dollar question. You know, it's so interesting. I didn't start out doing this. I saw an exhibit in a children's hospital, Shoes of Famous Chicagoans, and it fascinated me to see you know, how these well-worn shoes looked from these politicians, you know, Mayor Daley, we had Bozo the Clown, Scottie Pippen, and I thought, my goodness, I'd love to be able to show nurses' shoes in this kind of a scenario, but also pair it with their stories and really talk about what it is that they do. And the diversity in our profession through our stories and our shoes is so evident when you see this up close. So that's how the book started. So the story started individually, and then eventually I put them together in a book format.
Well, I think it's just wonderful because you really are giving voice to the millions of inspiring nurses that are out there. So tell us a little bit about, I understand that you have an interesting backstory as it relates to this book.
Oh,
would you share a little bit about that with us?
Thanks. Yeah, of course I will. You know, I had the book out. I've been in a lot of exhibits and art galleries and hospitals and so forth around the country. And after a couple of years, my mom said, you know, you really should interview your own family about like you do nurses and really get our family story. And to make a long story short about this family, I found out an amazing thing about my grandfather, man I had never met, that he was a shoemaker.
I'll be darned.
Out of all this. And so now I really feel as if I'm doing some sort of, you know, maybe it's in my genes that the shoes came up.
Interesting. So there's a real connection there as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, your grandfather would be proud, I think.
Oh, thank you. I think, and these shoes are, you know, and again, the shoes, you know, heart and soul of nursing. We're on our feet all day, and it shows in these shoes and in the stories that have never been shared with anyone for the most part. Nurses don't have time to go to the bathroom sometimes on the unit, much less exchange their stories. So I think it's a real, it's an honor for me to hear them, and it's a privilege for me to share them. With
well,
the world.
Well, could you share one or two of these stories with us?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. There's one woman who is a neuro nurse, and she works with head injury and spinal cord injury, and she was talking to somebody about. She said that, you know, that nursing is the most trusted profession. The downside of that is that we're seen primarily as scientists, not seen primarily as scientists and educators. We're seen as bedpan pushers and helpmeets. But there are a lot of very bright, very assertive, and very tough young women and men who don't want to go into nursing because they see it as a secondary role. They don't see it as a profession equal to that of medicine. The doctors I work with are my colleagues. I'm not subservient. I'm not subsidiary. I have my own science, and I practice And I practice mine as they practice theirs, and our two sciences are complementary. We need to make a big deal about that. When people ask me, why didn't you go into medical school? You're too smart to be a nurse. I always reply, do you want somebody stupid to be at your bedside? Do you want someone like that doing your work? So I really feel that we need to get past that stereotype that, you know, that if you were smart, you'd be a doctor. I think it's, you want your nurses to be the sharpest ones in the class, working with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when the doctors aren't there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. That's good. Do you have another story you could share with us?
I do. There is, okay. So there is a story about a having the luxury of time, because you see people running up and down the units all the time, but you have a good nurse, and that person will take the time to listen to you. And this nurse was actually working with a patient who was at, who had high blood pressure, and he was only 50 years old, and he was going in for a surgical procedure, and he had this uncontrollably high blood pressure, and she thought, well, you know, let's make sure that I have his information correct, and we have the medication that he needs after surgery. So she sat down with him, asked him to please show her how he applied his patches, and she found that the patches, they look like nicotine patches. They're small discs of medication with an overlay of foam rubber adhesive. He pulled out his box of patches and handed me the foam rubber adhesives. I remember that I sat there a few minutes and finally said, Mr. Smith, I need to talk to you about these medications. You've just handed me what goes over your clonidine patch. And he said, no, Anna, that's my clonidine patch. And I tried to tell him that nowhere on the portion of that foam did it indicate the dosage level. It was just the adhesive. I asked him what he did with the other, and he threw it away. For 3.5 years, this well-educated gentleman was opening each packet, throwing out the medicated disc, and applying the foam rubber adhesive to his arm.
Oh, no!
He'd gone through $15,000 worth of medication and essentially thrown it all away. And he turned to me and yelled. He wasn't yelling because he was an angry man. It was because for 3 years, his health had deteriorated, probably as a result of the uncontrolled hypertension, and no one could figure it out. And he was livid. He said, why couldn't my Ivy League educated cardiologist tell me how to apply this patch properly? So, you know, here we are 3 years later, truly, with this patient, and this nurse is probably the first person who actually sat down and asked, how are things going? Let me see what you're doing. Let's see that you're doing it correctly. And you see, and that's why you need to have an educated, compassionate nurse at your bedside, and you need plenty of them to be able to, you know, to navigate through this healthcare crisis, I think, that we're going through.
Wow.
Mm.
Oh, be darned. Yeah, I mean, to not get that explained properly.
Right. For 3 years, and again, that led to to his health deteriorating. So, so that really is it's unconscionable that it went on that long. Yeah.
Well, I think we have time for like one more. Give me one more short one.
Oh, sure. So this one is just a beautiful way of a nurse explaining death to a family. You know, that's part of what we do. And she was talking about the father who was, it says, getting closer to death. He was a DNR, do not resuscitate, which would offer the family a chance to have an uninterrupted experience at the end. And when his son came to visit, I explained to him about heart rhythms and what to look for on the monitor. I told him to look at the heart rhythm and see what type of pattern it was making on the screen. I asked him to imagine a weave in a sweater, and if you had a string and started to pull, it would keep the shape of the original weave until you began pulling it farther and farther out, and eventually it would go straight. So What you're going to see, I told him, is that the first little lump that's called the P wave, and it's going to start moving away from the high part called the QRS, and eventually it's going to get pulled away, and you're going to see a squiggle and a flat line. And so the son looked at the monitor, and I was talking, and he asked, am I starting to see what you're talking about? But it's just a beautiful, heartfelt way to communicate with your patients, with the families. It's something, I think it's just something from your heart that that's expressed, you know, so beautifully by someone who's there with you 24 hours a day.
Wow. So how do people get a copy of your book?
Well, they can go to Amazon and look for Heroic Acts in Humble Shoes, America's Nurses Tell Their Stories, or they can go to my website, which is www.irenestemler.com. So,
and that's S-T-E-M-L-E-R.
Correct.
So Irene Stemler, that's I-R-E-N-E-S-T-E-M-L-E-R.com.
Yes.
Well, Irene, thank you very much for being on today's Inspiring Women.
Oh, thank you very much. It was just a pleasure to talk about these nurses.
Oh, we're glad to have you on. You know, for those of you who are in the Chicagoland area, Friday, October 4th at the Oakbrook Bath and Tennis Club, we're going to have the Inspiring Women, the conference with some of our top-level CEOs and professional speakers that are going to be talking about entrepreneurial success secrets, marketing your brand, and how to have a wealth mentality in your career. One of the things I'd like to end with is a quote, and this is actually from Irene's book. And it's called Unsung Heroes. This is a song for all the unsung heroes who go unnoticed every day. They're not seeking fame and glory, though they deserve it anyway. You may not think a simple kindness would be worthy of a song, that one person cannot change the world, but my friends, you would be wrong. This is a song for all unsung heroes. We wrote these words with you in mind. Should you ever think that I'm not special, look in the mirror and a hero you will find. Well, this has been today's Inspiring Women. Thank you for listening. Till next time, have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Today's Inspiring Women. Please join host Deanne DeMarco and other entrepreneurial and business leaders next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Have an outstanding week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.